Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the family with
Alex Brant-Bernard Rasmussen.
And I'm Diana Pierce.
Hackmaster Ralph Toye Basham, MD.
Andy Brant-Bernard.
Co-host Catherine Brandt.
Look at this, the sixum. We got the sixum going, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Diana, Diana, it's been a while since I've seen you. How have you been?
Good, very good. You know, survived COVID, all the rest of that stuff. Had it last year, though.
You had COVID again last year?
Well, I didn't have it the first time. That was the
first
time. We had all the everything.
And you held out for a while.
We did. And it was not great, but it was, and we kept thinking, had we not had everything else that preceded it, it would have been worse. But yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good.
It happens.
Probably true. This all started because I was sitting around thinking about this, you know, watching TV, and people started bringing up your name and Pat Miles' name and Cindy Brucato's name, and you get on the list. And I began to think about that, of all the people that I've met in the news business over the years, the Don Shelby's of the world and Paul Majors, and I mean, all these people. And news really did change, and Pat was a good place to start because when she was put on with Dave Moore, I love Dave Moore, by the way. I thought he was a wonderful human being. But he was like, well, I don't need a partner. Why are they giving me a partner? A man, a woman, doesn't matter. I don't need a partner. Because news was that way. There was one guy who was going to tell you the news every night. But then women came along and changed news. And I think for the better. Because you got more than one side of a story.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, I was on a plane out in California. Quickly, my background story. I was on a plane. I was probably 18, 19 years old. Was living in L.A. at the time with a singing group. And the guy sitting next to me was a general manager of a television station in Fresno, California at the time. So we were flying from Fresno to L.A. And we just had a casual conversation. And he looked over at me and says, you know, have you ever thought of going into television broadcasting news?
Oh.
And I said, nope. He says, you have a good broadcast voice. And
yeah,
so And at the time, I was with the singing group, so it just had never occurred to me that that was something that I might investigate. So when I landed, I kind of started looking around. The group broke up, but I took a summer school class at UCLA in broadcasting, so it was Broadcasting 101. And I thought, okay, I am hooked. This is the direction I'm going to go. So I did.
There you go.
Yeah.
So where was your first station?
My first station was a 500-watt radio station. We were a daytimer in Seabrook, New Hampshire.
Wow.
Newburyport, New Hampshire. And so we would sign on when the sun rose. We would sign off when the sun set.
Yeah.
And I think there was a grand total of 8 people that worked in that station. And I was hired as the afternoon person, but the morning news director, quote unquote, quit after about, you know, a month or two of me being there. So then I went on to sign on after that. But this tells you how small it was. I would sign on the station, the radio, the other sales guy would come in just a little bit after that. And then I would walk across the street to the police department to see who had been arrested the night before. And that was part
wow.
of what I did. Then they got the bright idea of like, hey, we're going to sell obituaries on the air. So then part of my job was to record an obituary that would run opposite of whenever I was on the air. So,
makes sense.
Yeah, that was cool.
What a great system. And that's when it was AM radio, wasn't it? That's
AM.
Because you had to log off. You had to sign on and off because of the sun affected the signal and messed with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good old days.
Amazing story that is.
So going to Minneapolis must have seemed like a huge market.
I didn't come here directly from there.
Okay.
Because then I went from that station to another station up in New Hampshire. And then from there, I saw that. I was working my way into television because I have a degree in broadcast journalism from Boston University. But I wasn't ready for television. I just wanted to get my reporting chops down. So I flew out to California. I needed a demo tape. I knocked on a Fresno television station. The guy said, come in. It wasn't the same guy. I don't know who it was, but he gave me a bunch of script copies, you know, like go home, rewrite this, come back the next day. I did. And so then I sat in their studio and recorded it. And he says, we don't have any openings for you, but here's your demo tape.
Oh, nice.
I took that and then went back to New Hampshire. And my first job in television was at Channel 11, WENH-TV. We were the public television station in the basement of the University of New Hampshire. Again, 10 people in our department. So here you are. I'm co-anchoring. I called it Youth News because both my co-anchor and I were, 24 and he was 22. He had just graduated from the college. And we had to fill a half hour of New Hampshire news. So, and no commercial breaks.
Oh.
So our stories would be like, 5 minutes long. I mean, they were just, you know, forever. So
I mean, back in those days, was there New Hampshire news?
Yeah, yes, of course. I mean,
yeah.
Who doesn't go to New Hampshire if you're running for president?
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, very true.
So, It was interesting. And again, prior to that particular incident, I was working at the second radio station. Carter had come to town, and so he was going to be at at the high school, local high school. And so everybody was set up. You know, you go through security. I had my little tape recorder. They made me open it up. They made me play it. And then they made me take it back, right? So I plug in. And because I'm local, I'm standing with our group of, you know, local news reporters. And so Carter arrives. So he comes in one door. The National Press Corps comes in the opposite door. And I mean, it's like a sea wave of people running to get to their places. We're on a stand in the back. And so they're all lining up, making sure their cameras, blah, blah, blah. And they just wait, you know. Carter waited until everybody was in place, and then everything started. Well, what had happened is CBS came in, and they looked around. They didn't see a place where they could plug in. So they unplugged my tape recorder. And then they plugged in. Well, he walked away. As soon as he walked away, I went over, I unplugged his tape recorder and plugged mine back in. You know, I thought, well, you know, screw you guys. You know, I was here first. So, you know, I don't know if he ever got the recording of it, but it's like, too bad, so sad. You know, so, yeah, there was stuff that happened in New Hampshire enough that, you know, we would do stuff. So, you know, it's just like, in any state, there's always something going on. That's might not have national headlines, but you always got something going on.
You know, looking back at it, and it just fascinates me because I'm of that age where all of the anchors back when I was a little kid were men. Whether it was weather, it was sports, it was lead anchor, whatever, it was always all men. And, of course, I was raised with the rest of my family by our mother. My father wasn't around much. So I'm like, well, why don't they have women do? Because in my life, I had my mother and my two older sisters. My brother was in the Marine Corps in Vietnam, so he wasn't around either. So my examples growing up were always women. And that's why I used to think, like, well, why don't they have women doing the news, too, to get their take on it? Because men and women have different viewpoints on different subjects. Why did it take so long, do you think, to bring women and go, hey, let's get their side of stories too?
I think it started in New York. I think Barbara Walters, when she came on and she started co-anchoring the Today Show, and everybody gravitated to, you know, her because they did. That was a very successful, you know, morning show. And so I think once that door was opened, I think they started to see things happen all the way across the United States. So by the time I was sitting next to the general manager on the plane, it was already happening. So, you know, I was starting to see that. And again, I grew up like you watching, you know, three guys, you know, the sports guy, the weather guy, and the news guy, you know, all anchoring. And so for me, it was surreal that by the time I was hired then in Fresno, because I worked there for a year before I came here, I was co-anchoring with the guy that I grew up watching do the news. And so that was, for me, that was really, that was exciting. It was very cool to sit next to him. Now, he wasn't, again, he was kind of like, ah, here's one more woman sitting next to me. But, you know, yeah, whatever. But that's okay. So, yeah, it worked out great.
I think it is a wonderful situation. Like I said, for a person like me raised by three women, it made total sense to me, obviously, but that wasn't the norm for the rest of the world. But you do like to get different viewpoints now. And I mean, Catherine, my wife, we've been together for 44 years, been married 40 years, and on July 7th this year, I don't get opinions anymore at the house. So that's why I went back and got a radio show.
You're just such a shrinking violet.
Yeah. A shrinking violet, yes. That's true.
Well, you know, but again, starting out, they didn't want to hear opinions from anybody. Because you were the news anchor, you weren't the news maker.
Yep.
Only the people who were making the headlines were the people that they wanted to hear from. So that there's been that sea change over the years is just, you know, they would have opinion pieces. They would have, like, you know, somebody come and do an opinion piece every so often.
Right.
But
right.
Not at any of the stations that I worked with.
Didn't Dave Moore do a Moore Minute or something like that, some sort of an opinion thing?
I think he did. See, yes, I got here in 83. Like, so he could have been doing it then. He could have been doing it then. So
yeah.
He had bedtime stories. I know that. That was one of my favorite things to watch in all the entire. Was that on Saturday night or Friday? I think Saturday nights.
I don't know.
Maybe it was Friday nights.
Yeah.
He did bedtime news.
Yeah, that had happened way before I got here, though. So I didn't see him do that.
Do you still sing? I remember Jeff Passold. I don't know. We were out somewhere, and I said, I think you were new, maybe. No, you came before Jeff. You came before Jeff. Jeff
I
said,
did.
I think, that's what I said. I said, so what do you think about your new, anchoring job? Because he was only doing sports before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's what the story was. And he said, oh, Diana Pierce, she's just great. Have you ever heard her sing? I'm like, no. And then you just mentioned you were in a group. He said, she's got the most amazing voice. So, do you still sing?
Well, thanks to Jeff on that one. I recorded three CDs. Wow, does that sound old? And, you know, I had a lot of cassettes that we dumped into a trash can at some point. once in a while, if I have a fundraiser that I'm invited to and they are desperate for somebody to be up on stage, you know, I can go do that and I can usually find pianist to go with me to do something like that. But, you know, that's so far downstream from what I'm doing these days. That just that takes a lot of mental energy for me and a lot of rehearsal and stuff like that. And it's okay. It's just not my go-to.
Is that text you're sending so important that you missed your turn? Is that text you're sending so important that you ran the red light? Is that text you're sending so important you didn't see the ball coming onto the road or the child that followed? Hi, I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. When you take your eyes off the road for even 4 seconds, your vehicle travels 100 yards. That's the entire length of a football field. If you absolutely have to text, you need to pull off the road somewhere safe and do it from there. Texting and driving is against the law and can cause serious injury or even death to you and others. Now that is important. We hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, please contact us.
Find Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Going farther with Mike Bryant on your side, seeking justice for the injured. Bradshaw and Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their 6 Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We have our guest, Tim Blake Nelson, on the line.
Tim, how are you? Oh, Diana, you want to interview our special guest? You and I could do it shoulder to shoulder.
I will join all of you for him. He's a fantastic actor. Love him.
See? What do you think of that?
It's very, very kind, very generous. Thank you. It's nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you as well. Diana Pierce is in studio with us because we just kind of decided to.
Because we talked her into it.
Yeah, because we talked her into it. But we're talking about, when I was growing up, it was all men doing the news. And I don't know if you know this or not, but Minneapolis, St. Paul, I believe, if not number one, is at least number two, maybe behind Chicago, but I don't even know about that. The best news crews in the United States. As a matter of fact, seriously, Catherine and I moved from Minneapolis to New York City because I was doing a lot of voiceover back in those days. And I would tune in the news and go, this news is nowhere near as good as it is in Minneapolis. It was, I don't know, it was more cartoony or something, but where did you grow up?
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And was it, oh, Tulsa, Oklahoma. God, too bad Gelfand's not here. His family's from there originally.
Oh, yeah.
Nice Jewish family from Tulsa, Oklahoma. But so how are things? What's the latest?
In Tulsa or in my life?
Wherever you want to talk about
it. All the
it.
News.
Well, I guess the latest is I've made a movie with my son, Henry Nelson, called Asleep in My Palm, and it's rolling out right now. It's in theaters and just came on VOD now after spending a month in theaters, and it's going to be streaming on all the regular platforms in about 2 weeks. And I'm very excited. I play the lead in this movie, opposite a young actress named Chloe Kerwin, who's from Kansas City and a wonderful actress. And the movie was written and directed by my son, Henry. It's called Asleep in My Palm.
How so what's it all about?
It's about a father and daughter living off the grid in northeastern Ohio, and they exist parasitically off of an elite liberal arts college. That is Oberlin College. I don't know if you're familiar with mm-hmm. Oberlin College and Conservatory mm-hmm. in Ohio. It's a world-class conservatory and a really good, attached to a very good liberal arts college that some pretty extraordinary people have gone to over the years, like Lena Dunham and Corey Stahl, the actor, and many other very interesting people. And my son went there, and he wrote this movie about the interactions between the college and the town, which is in a recession. And so it examines the dichotomy between haves and have-nots in a really interesting, almost Dickensian way through this relationship with this father and daughter living off the grid in the area.
What inspired this?
Well, Henry lived off campus for his last 3 years of school. He did 5 years because he got 2 degrees. And he just started to recognize, as I think many of us do who go to these colleges and end up living off campus and not in a dorm, he started to recognize this contradiction between not only the wealth of the school but the values of the school and how maybe sometimes those values weren't reflected in the way the schools and the students interacted with the town and the townies. So he decided to write it, a story, from the point of view of these two characters who are kind of living off the college. They bathe in the dorms, and they steal stuff from free bins, and sort of haunt the college. And over the course of the film, the daughter has a very compelling interaction with one of the students that is a sort of deep dive into those contradictions. It's very interesting and leads to a combustible conclusion that Henry wrote. He wanted to respond and reflect, respond to and reflect what he was seeing.
Well, that makes total sense. Diana, any questions from you? See, you got one of the best interviewers in studio here, Diana Pierce, great news anchor for many years in town. We're talking right now actually about women's influence on the news and how when I was growing up, it was all men doing the news. They brought women along, and Diana Pierce was one of the first women that came on the scene. And we got a different take on the news, so that's why I like to turn to Diana to get her take on things like interviews and your story.
Oh, Tim, I'm kind of looking over your IMDb profile. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I look at all of the things that you've done. Now you're working with your son, and so how long have the two of you then been working on this project? Because these things don't happen overnight.
No, they don't. There are really two answers to that question. Spiritually, we've been after it since over 10 years. Henry turned to me when he was about 12 and said, I want to do this, and I want us to do it together. And I believed him at the time because he'd already spent a good 5 years going to movie sets with me and being with me from morning to night. So he wasn't just coming for a couple of hours. He would stay, particularly over the summers when he didn't need to be in school, he would just stay with me on a cot in the hotel room, and we'd wake up at 5 in the morning and go to set, and I'd be in the makeup chair by 5:30 or 6, and he would stay until 6 at night and just kind of live the life, and he absolutely loved it. And he's also always written, whether it's music — that's what he studied at Oberlin, he studied classical and jazz composition — or eventually screenplays as well. He just is constantly writing. And so when he was 22, he gave me this script. And I had just done a film called Old Henry.
Loved that.
And it was a very successful indie film, probably the most successful indie film I've ever done. And Henry worked on the crew. He was in the art department. And so the financier and the director and writer of that movie got to know him. And as Old Henry was rolling out and starting to do really well, I gave those guys the script and said, Henry's going to direct this. I will produce it, and I will stand next to him and be a safety net. I guess that's a bit of a mixed metaphor, but I will be beneath him as a safety net. They financed it. So we were making it suddenly in the winter, very, very harsh winter of 2022. So that's the story.
It's a great story. And where can people go to check it out?
It's still in some theaters. It's playing here in New York City at the Alamo Draft House. But it just went on video on demand today. I think it goes on today. So you can do VOD, and then in a couple of weeks it'll be streaming, and you can see it on Apple and Amazon. And again, it's called Asleep in My Palm.
Speaking of interesting stories, we have a question from the chat that you don't have to talk about if you don't want to. But so, yep, exactly. So Ralph, Tim shot some scenes for Dune 2. Notice I say shot, not had in the movie. What happened there, Tim?
Right. You know, Denis, one of the best directors in the world, Denis Villeneuve, who made that film. I had a great time with him. We shot these scenes, and as can happen, his movie was coming in well over 3 hours, and he needed mm-hmm. to trim it, and I got the short end of the stick. And that's just, you know, you do enough movies, and that happens.
Can you say who you were playing?
I would leave that to
I figured.
Yeah. If he wants to, I don't want to cross any lines or break protocol.
Fair enough.
And he's the writer director, so he can talk about it if he wants. So, what do you guys think about the election coming up?
We try not to.
Right now. Yeah, Tim, the only problem is that everybody is so angry and so hateful right now. The lying going on the national news is amazing. I don't know which, Tim, how do we decide which way to go? I
thought you said you were voting for me.
Yeah, I was voting for my wife. That's
what he said the other day. He's like, I don't know what to vote for. I'm going to write you with.
That's right. I'm going to write in my wife. There's no question. I think the problem that I have with it all, Tim, is the fact there's so much anger and hatred. I just don't think that's good for America. I really don't.
No, it's an incredibly polarizing moment. I say to my kids, though, that probably, and I was only 4 years old, but I think 1968, 1969 was even worse.
Yeah, it was.
And it's hard to imagine that, I mean, there were assassinations, and, I mean, it's hard to imagine, and obviously, I'm talking about Robert Kennedy. I know that John F. Kennedy was killed earlier, but it is hard for them to imagine that it ever could have been worse. But it looks like maybe there'll be two female running mates, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not casting. I'm not going to give any opinion on either of them. I'll just keep my opinions to myself. But it could be Stefanik or Noam with Trump. And it's definitely going to be Harris with Biden, unless Trump chooses Tim Scott, which is obviously a possibility.
But there could, you know,
it could be, you know, that would be, that's a step forward, having a woman on both tickets.
Yes, no question about it. Well, I got to ask you, though, Tim, what about, we got to turn to Minnesota here. What about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s running mate, Jesse Ventura?
Yep.
Does he want to be taken seriously or not?
Yeah. Is that his vice president?
Well, it was between him and Aaron Rodgers?
Correct.
What?
The woman at Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I can.
Oh. Yep.
Goes Ventura.
It's not final yet. It's not final yet. He's just there interviewing them.
That's
right. You could say that his having won as governor of Minnesota was a precursor to Trump.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of what? You know what? That's a very good point, Tim, because I think you are 100% right about that. It got people like Trump thinking, well, maybe I should run for office.
Schwarzenegger, Ventura, yeah. Trump.
Yeah.
Reagan.
Yeah, Reagan. Actor, yeah. Yeah. There's definitely precedent.
Yeah, what's with the old guys?
There's a lot of old guys.
What is with the old guys?
No,
a great question.
No, it's what's with the old white guys? You know, why aren't we... Why aren't we seeing more diversity, and why aren't we seeing younger people? Man, that is so disappointing. In this election, all a bunch of old guys. What? Really?
Opportunity to choose Nikki Haley.
Yeah. Well, that was an opportunity. Correct.
It was. Yeah.
Or anybody younger in either party.
Yeah, for real.
I think that's a good question to ask right here. Are we, Tim, so far apart from, let's say, well, I was born in 1951, so let's put it that way. Between people my age, the people in their, let's say, mid-40s, and then the people in their mid-20s, do we have anything in common
No.
to pick a president?
Well, that's always been true, though.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you look at that, there's that Philip Larkin poem, High Windows. And every generation, which I recommend anybody read, every generation believes that there's this chasm between the youngest and those in their crepuscular years, as they say.
yes, exactly.
That's common. And it will always be true. And so I think that I'd rather look at that as a salutary situation in that it balances out. And so if a lot of people like us vote and a lot of younger people vote, then you have a good representation of the entire polity.
Yeah. If you want to hear a good example of how long this has been a thing, so I'm going to truncate a quote here, and I'm going to tell you who said it and when.
Oh, dear.
All right, so the children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. They're tyrants, not servants of their households. Who said that and when?
I'm going with Grover Cleveland.
Oh, man. I'm thinking something Japanese in the
1600s.
Yeah. Well, much Socrates. In the 4th century B.C.
Okay, so...
So people have been making this observation for quite a while, yes. Pre-biblical, yeah.
I'll tell you a story in my life. I grew up Roman Catholic, Tim. Nice Catholic boy going to Catholic school. I'm 8 years old when JFK gets elected president of the United States. It's a very big deal to my mother, and there's a reason I'm telling this story, because I went to Catholic school. I was at St. Anne's in North Minneapolis going to school. I was at home having lunch when it was announced that that JFK had been shot and he was taken to the hospital. He was still alive at the time. We get back to class. I will never forget this as long as I live. And why he would have done this, I don't know. We're in class. There's a moment of silence as the nun leaves the room, comes back, and announces to the 7th grade children at St. Anne's, John F. Kennedy has died. And one of the kids cheered. I will never forget that. A Roman Catholic president in here cheering the fact that he's been murdered. I will tell you this, Tim, that nun had a really good right hook. I will tell you that. She did not see the humor.
She belted him?
She belted him, and I mean, she smoked him. It was unbelievable.
I don't doubt it.
It's like, why would you do that?
I wonder how many people can.
Politics.
I wonder how many people can say I was punched by a nun. Not just like slapped with a ruler, but like a haymaker from a nun.
Yeah, I actually think there's a few.
Yeah,
it's probably double digits at least.
Yeah, but they never rabbit punched anybody. Yeah. So.
No, that's true.
Oh, Art's giving me the signal. Tim's got to go.
Oh, Tim, you got to come back, Tim. We loved having you. Thank you, sir.
Oh, pleasure talking with you, and I liked hearing. You guys talked before I came on.
Very kind of you.
Yeah, take care.
You too, Tim. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Lady.
When you go to a restaurant, you expect the chef to be an expert. You expect your auto mechanic to be an expert when it comes to fixing your car. You judge them both by the results of their work. Josh Arnold is an expert in investments and planning your financial future. Josh Arnold is my expert, and he should be yours too. I talk to Josh every week, and he understands the market and the economy, and he knows how to plan for your retirement. Don't put it off another day. The man with your plan is Josh Arnold. Call Josh now for a no-obligation 48-minute evaluation. You've got nothing to lose, and you'll have an expert planning and managing your financial future. Call Josh at 952-925-5608. That's 952-925-5608. Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC Security Investment Advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice. Tom Bernard is a paid endorser.
Streaming now and... going to be well. It's going to be. Is it? Did he say streaming now or it's going to be released?
I think he said today. It starts today.
Today, I thought so. But can you imagine the feeling in that room? Because I will to this day, even though I was only at the time, like I said, I think I was 8 years old. Matter of fact, I know I was 8 years. No, I was 9 because I had just turned 9. That is true. But this guy gets smoked. a couple of years later when I'm 11 years old in seventh grade, and I will never forget the horror in my brain when that kid started cheering. I went, oh, my God, this is going to be hideous.
Well, I mean, no matter who the president is, an assassination of a president is not a good omen.
Shouldn't be a happy day.
Yeah. No, yeah, bad things are about to happen when that occurs.
I was in school, elementary school in California at the time, so we had a big time difference. And so we knew something was happening, but we didn't know what was happening. And mm-hmm. all the teachers were talking to one another. And after the, it must have been national news, I don't know who was listening to what was made, our teachers broke out in tears. And so that was what we were observing as young students. And I'm only a couple of years behind you. But so, you know, can you imagine coming back in and just seeing your teachers weeping? So there, nobody was making any noise. None of the kids said anything, you know. But it was, you know, to see, you know, to see the teachers congregating, to see that. And I don't know, but I think they sent us home early that day as a result.
Yeah, they did. Yep.
So,
especially after that. Now, I just talked about the fact that a nun had to punch this. And I remember the kid's name, but I won't say it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Punching him. And she didn't slap him. She punched him right in the face. And by coincidence, Diana Pierce has told me many times she'd like to punch Tim Lammers.
Maybe she has.
Everyone has wanted to punch Tim Lammers.
Diana.
Hey, Tim. You know what? You remember that boxing glove thing that you gave me? It was a prop for some movie.
Would you turn off your phone?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I would get various promotional items that I would give to Diana for during, we used a lot of them during our movie reviews on Care 11.
For sure. So. I think the funniest one, though, was the Star Wars prop. And
the Chewbacca mask.
It was a Chewbacca mask. And I put that on the air, and we got to giggling so much. I don't think that we made it through that review, because I kept setting off the...
She kept growling like Chewbacca during the review. Yeah. So, yeah, it was pretty funny. Yeah.
No question. So, we've been having a great conversation, Tim, with Diana Pierce. And the reason this had come up, about a week ago maybe, I was thinking about this, about, you know, looking back. And Dave Moore got to be a friend of mine later on in life. And so many great anchors coming through the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. But I was just thinking, again, being raised by my mother and my two older sisters and my younger brothers were with us, women's views on news did change the news, I think, for the better. Diana, do you think it was for the better?
It gave us a place to be seen and heard. So, that's
what you were going
to
say. No, actually. Terrible mistake.
Wouldn't that have been interesting? No, forget it. You know. Going back a little bit, the one thing that made me notice this market, again, I was California oriented. I went to school in Boston, so I was East Coast oriented, and then went back to California before I ended up here. There was a magazine. It's long gone. Broadcasting Magazine.
Oh God, yes.
Okay, and on the front cover, Hubbard bought the front cover every month, or however often it came out, and so I would always be seeing the anchor people from KSTP, and it's like, wow, that is a powerhouse station. And then by the time I was, you know, they knocked on the, Gannett knocked on the door, and Paul and I were hired at the same time. But when they knocked on the door, and it's like, wow, that market is doing so well. That is a news market that I would love to work in. Yep. And so, but you could see a change even with Harvard. So it would go from all the guys on the front cover to whoever it is they had hired. So Cindy was already on the air with Stan when I came here. And then Pat was with Dave at Channel 4. So, I mean, the established groups were in place by the time Paul and I went on the air.
I did not know this, but I'm asking for the first time. Was Minneapolis one of the first markets to bring women on to the anchor desk?
On a local basis? I don't think so. I think LA had already done it. I don't know about Chicago. Okay. So, yeah. But it was all kind of done pretty quickly at the same time. And again, when I had the guy sitting next to me talking about it, I mean, obviously the sea change was already happening. So, yeah. I mean, that wasn't an idea out of, you know, that he just came up with. It was already happening. And again, I heard Barbara Walters, you know, in doing mm-hmm. what she did. And then I bought her book. It was How to Talk to Anybody About Anything. I think that was pretty much the title of it. Mm-hmm. And so then she listed all of the interviews she had done at that point. I mean, that was a long time ago. And kind of her thought process behind researching each one. And for me as a journalist, that was not anything I had ever seen in journalism school. So I mean, it's like, okay, this is how you do it. That's how you get there.
Sounds good to me. Timmy, what do you got cooking today, Buster? Anything great to talk about?
I don't know. Everything seems kind of on the downslide after the Oscars last week.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
That was a pretty crazy time. So, no. I mean, if I could plug my new gig at Forbes, I did an interview with David Desmalchin, our buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Who's
I love
been on
him.
The show a couple times.
Great guy.
And it actually has to do with a late night TV show called Late Night with the Devil coming out this week. I described it to David, and he agreed. It's Johnny Carson meets Jerry Springer meets The Exorcist. So,
oh, okay.
Intriguing.
There's your go. Yeah. Where is that coming out on?
It's going to be in theaters in limited release, but you can catch it on several theaters in the Twin Cities area and probably okay. Florida. And then it's going to debut on streaming on Shudder on April 19th. But it's a hell of a movie. It's really – so what it does is it takes a – it's like a found footage thing where it was the final broadcast of this show where David's character, Jack Delroy, was once a fierce competitor of Johnny Carson's. Now he's on the downslide and he's doing like Jerry Springer stunts and like Jerry Springer like guests on his show. And on Halloween night, 1977, he has a parapsychologist. He has a skeptic. He has a psychic. And all of those together is a mix for disaster. And so it's filmed like an actual talk show in its final hour. And it's really amazing. It is an amazing. I'm not just saying that because I know David, because he's a terrific actor and a terrific guy.
He is, yeah.
But it's really, not that I pay too close attention to Rotten Tomatoes, but it does, I believe it had 100% rating on it.
Is it
Everybody
really?
Loving this movie.
Are they redoing the scene from The Joker? On the late night talk show.
Oh man. What, you know what? That scene, has everybody seen Joker, first of all?
I haven't seen it, but I do know you get what you deserve is what you're talking about, right?
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, so Robert De Niro in the film plays this talk show host who mocks Joaquin Phoenix's Joker and then decides to have him on the air after the Joker has had his psychological break, mm-hmm. and let's just say things go horribly awry. And it is a hell of a shock. Well, obviously, Ralph has seen it. It is a hell of a shocking scene. Even though if you see the movie again, you see it coming, it's still shocking as all hell. It's yeah. really crazy yeah. stuff. So, yeah, things can go pretty crazy on late night television, that's for sure.
So, well, that will be, I think, sound a great premise
yeah.
For something like this.
We were at lunch the other day and I was eavesdropping. There was a big table of women and they were talking about different shows that they were watching. And they mentioned Apples Never Fall.
Yeah.
Streaming on Peacock. Annette Bening's in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, well, she's really hot right now after her movie. Did she get nominated for an Academy Award?
She did. Diana Pierce, you need to see Diana Nyad, played by Annette Bening in Nyad.
Haven't seen it, but I've seen some of the promos, previews of it. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, her and Annette Bening's great, and Jodie Foster's in it as well. Both of them were nominated, Jodie in the supporting and Annette in lead, and didn't win. You know, I really was hoping Annette. Obviously, Jodie's won a couple times before, but Annette Bening is amazing. And they mix real footage along with the film in there. So you see a lot of the real Diana Nyad. And then, of course, the epilogue or whatever shows ample amounts of the real event and what happened. And Yeah, I maybe shed a tear 80. It's really, really emotional stuff.
Well, Catherine just told me yesterday that somebody's trying to strip Diana Nye out of that title, saying there's no proof she ever did it.
No, what? I think she actually, okay, so it was Guinness Book of World Records took away her title or whatever they bestow upon people. I don't know what it's called. And also there was some, I guess, in real life, there was a lot of squabbling between the crew that was on the boat, and they tried to take away whatever it is that she got, which I don't know if it was just the Guinness Book of World Records or some other Hall of Fame sort of thing. Yeah, I guess she was messed with afterwards.
I read headlines. I thought, I'm not going to get into this because you know what part of the issue is. When something is going for awards, generally somebody tries to undermine it. Just like the day before the Oscars, some screenwriter said, no, I wrote the screenplay for The Holdovers, not...
Oh, God.
Yeah, accused somebody of plagiarism. So there's a really, it's a cutthroat competition, and there was some controversy about NIAID when that came out. And again, I didn't look into it because I know what the game is. You know, it's all, again, it's all about money, right, Tommy?
That's and, what it's all about.
And awards means money. It just does. It's a marketing boom. If you can win an award or even a nomination, I mean, studios will use that in their advertisements. Academy Award nominee. I mean, that's like golden to them. So yeah,
I'll be really curious, Tim, when it gets to a point where, when you see all the AI coming into writing, how are they going to determine who's, you know?
Yeah.
Who's the ultimate creator in that? Because it's coming. It will come.
It will. And you know, it's interesting, though, just in journalism right now, a publication I used to write for has issued warnings more than once, which tells me that they busted writers using AI to write articles.
Oh.
So there's got to be a way of that they're detecting it. So
yeah, but when you think about how they create scripts, that would have been a good question for Tim Blake Nelson. But when they think about how they create scripts, these days, it's in a lot of cases, not always, but in a lot of cases, it's a group, you know, participation.
Oh yeah,
and so you know, unless you know that the author, it's, you know, it's like his son, he had the deal, he wrote the script, and so, but you know, that's not the case for a lot of these, you know, films that are, they're coming out, the blockbusters. Oh my gosh, there's like 20 people that are all associated with writing it. And so in the future, or now, you know, I'll be really curious, how are they, would they screen for something like that? Is that a problem? You know,
wasn't
in the future,
part of the writer's strike that they were supposed to figure that out or start
that,
yeah,
but again, the thing about the strike that's interesting is they can come to agreements, but you got to remember these agreements, it's not a lifetime contract. Every 3 years, they're going to have to confront this issue. And can you imagine? I mean, AI changes from day to day. What the hell is it going to be like in 3 years?
Yeah.
You know, 3 years from now, you may not need writers. AI may have taken over.
And that's what they're afraid of. I mean, that's what they're afraid of right now. And let's, again, a business, it's a movie business. It's a television business. So scrimp, save wherever you can. And if they think that somehow they can get by with using an AI script to not pay a writer to do it, they're going to do it. That's why the fights were between the studios and the artists, because they're just two separate entities, you know?
That does make sense. Diana, did you ever... on set, well, not while on camera, of course, but on set, have a discussion with your co-anchor, a male co-anchor, about how to do a story? Was it all pre-scripted? I mean, I got to believe that some stories, a man's take and a woman's take, are going to be totally different. How did they decide when they did start going with a male anchor, female anchor, how they would handle that?
Yeah, that was the great thing about working with Paul. We would talk about stuff not on the set, but we sat next to each other in the newsroom, And so, once in a while, we'd talk about something, if I had a question. But he didn't mansplain anything to me.
Okay.
No, he never did. I mean, he is the super consummate, thoughtful guy when it came down to doing the job. And so, if there would be anything, I would try, because he had such a great sense of humor, if there would be anything that I would try to do at the very end, before we go, try to see if we could, play a little bit at the very, very end of the newscast. But, during the course of the evening, there wouldn't be a lot of chatter, but, once in a while there might be something. I was just blessed and privileged to work with him for as long as I did.
And then Passel came along.
And ruined everything.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean?
I tease.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Jeff's a very good friend.
Oh, yeah. No, but Jeff was doing sports,
Yes,
so
he was, yeah.
The thing was, and Paul would get up and go into the sports department, which was completely, I might as well have been on the moon. It was on the other side of the news, newsroom.
Yeah.
And so, you could tell there was something going on in there, and they'd be watching a game, and you'd hear kind of a roar, and everybody would be, talking about whatever that they were doing over there. But and I don't know if you've heard this story or Jeff has talked about it, but there would be something that one of the main guys had eaten previously.
Uh-oh.
And then there would be, let's just say there was something that was airing in the sports office.
Unsavory,
like beyond unsavory.
Beyond savory.
And there would be an exodus of all the guys out of that tiny little cubicle area, like you wouldn't believe. I mean, there was like an explosion of something, and all of a sudden, all five of them would come running out of there, screaming.
Yeah, like 5 year old, 5 year olds. Yeah. Yeah, some feculent discharge.
And so,
yeah.
Let's just put it this way: I never had a chance to experience that, because that's just I wasn't but. It would be funny, so don't light a match in that room. That would have been a problem.
I can see that. One of my favorite stories, you talk about Paul Majors. Paul and I and Passel used to hang out and play a lot of golf together and have a good time and all the rest of it. But Ron Majors, I worked with at KSTP back way, way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget one time Ron Majors telling a story about being in Chicago and Jerry Springer was in the same basic area. There are these offices, whether it was for the local news, I think it was, I don't remember what channel he was even on in Chicago, but hell of a career down there. But he told me one time, he's walking down the hall and Jerry Springer's coming at him the other way. And Jerry, by the way, I was found to be a pleasant guy, talked to him a number of times, really good guy. And Ron Majors said, Jerry, do you enjoy doing that show? And he said, Ron, I make $7 million a year. What do you think? So if you don't like the show, I don't really care, Ron.
Yep.
I'm making a lot of dough. And then, of course, Jerry's no longer with us. That was kind of weird. He just kind of...
We were visiting England when Jerry Springer, the musical, came out.
Oh God.
My gosh. You would have thought that was the second coming over there. They were so excited to see that on whichever stage it was. And I kept thinking, the musical? Really? Yeah.
And you know who starred in that musical?
I didn't know there was one.
Oh.
So strange.
Yeah, the star, I could have changed, obviously, after a certain time run. David Soul.
I didn't know that.
David Soul starred as Jerry Springer in Jerry Springer, the musical in London.
What was the name of their TV show again, the cop show?
Starsky and Hutch.
Starsky and Hutch, there you go.
And
very good.
Don't Give Up on Us, Baby.
Don't give up on
great
us,
song,
baby.
I think.
Yeah, it's a good song. You're absolutely right about
mm-hmm.
that. So, Diana, you came up right at the beginning of all the women showing up on set.
The voice.
But again, that's the reason we're having this series on, is talking about how news did change when women came along. It was good to get the male perspective, the female perspective. Maybe somebody a little bit older, maybe somebody a little bit younger. I think it was a brilliant move. What do you think, Diana?
I, you know, that's progress. Everybody, once the change starts, it's going to matriculate across the United States. And that's exactly what happened. And I was very lucky to be part of that. I was lucky to be part of that at Channel 11. I don't think that they had had much in the way of female anchors much before I got there.
Right. No.
And
exactly.
So they did have, you know, John Bachman and Cora Ann Mihalik were the anchors when Paul and I got there. But I don't think they had been on the air too long. Of course, Cora Ann went on to New York City, I believe, after she left us. And then John Bachman was with us for a couple of years and then, of course, went to Des Moines, was number one guy down there for years and years and years, and then retired. So, things were happening. They were already happening. It was great to be part of it. I look back and bless it, everything. So, one of the things I was thinking about, that you might be interested, because, people always want, and maybe this came about because you were doing these other things. Maybe it came about because Randy Shaver has announced that he's going to retire now.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things with Paul was that he liked to play. And so not everything that we did on the air you could play with. But when it came to the state fair, all bets were off. And so there was one time I was, and it was our old, not where the Care Barn is now, but it was kind of, actually it was where Minnesota Public Radio was, but it was called an Earth Home, Earth, whatever it was. Skanky, on top of all of that, we had our broadcast area up above, kind of on the, above the, wherever the thing was, and then there was a little dugout at the bottom, and they kind of had, public seating there. So I was doing an interview with one of our regular guests, and she would bring on animals to interview. And so she had gone next door to the snake place. She went someplace. She got an alligator. And so brought the alligator, and it was on a display table right in front. And so, here I am. I'm trying to do this interview with this gal. And the next thing I know, there's a pork chop that comes floating down from up above. Paul has hooked a pork chop and has swung it over the side and is dangling it over where we're standing doing this interview. And the audience could see what was happening from the get-go, but I didn't see it because I was, talking to my guest until it was, right in front of my eyeballs. And so it was absolutely... I think I was horrified at the time, but I think it was absolutely one of the best bits... he had done over there. So,
love doing it. God, you just reminded me of a wonderful thing. And I can't remember who it was, but I think it might have been Lastman. Cora Ann Mihalik used to come in to the KQ Morning Show when she first got into town, And again, things had changed quite a bit in television news. And I will never forget, I'm not sure it was Lastman, but I think it was. But he, for some reason, went... our special guest today, Cora Alcoholic.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure it's not Cora Alcoholic. I'm almost positive that it's not.
She was great. She was the energizing bunny in the newsroom. She would go around. Yeah, of course, I think it was because the pots of coffee that she was always brewing and walking around the newsroom with. But, we would get there in the afternoon, and she would have a pot of coffee, and she was walking around serving like she was in, insert name of place that you would get coffee. But, and she would just walk around, coffee, and she just make the round. And, she was very nice, very fun.
No question about it. Diana, thank you so much for being with us today, because this is working out exactly like I thought it would. Pat Miles coming on yesterday, you coming on today. Tomorrow, Liz Collins going to be on the show. I've always loved, if you ever met Catherine, that I like strong women. There's no question about that. My mother was, my sister's
I have. Catherine, I follow you on X, so I get to see what you're posting all the time. Well, I don't always, make comments on it, but yeah. But once in a while, you'll see me give you a thumbs up or a heart or something on it. So,
Big shot.
Yeah. And I should note, if you follow Diana Pierce, on Facebook. She has amazing photography that she posts. It's really
oh, that's right. We were supposed to talk about that.
Well, it's now I have DianaPiercePhotography.com. So if you want to kind of see some of the things, I need to actually update that a little bit. There's not enough pictures on there. But yeah, no, you know, that was the one thing after retiring. I decided that I was going to pick up the camera and be on the opposite end of the camera and taking photos. So mostly it's flower photography, but sometimes it can be, you know, it can be artistic flower photography. So yeah, it's okay. No, it's all good.
But the great thing about this is now we can have you back to talk about your photography.
Boy, I tell you what, if people are listening to us, there's nothing like talking about photography when you can't see it.
Put pictures up.
You can hold it up on camera here because you post all this stuff on YouTube anyway. So, you know.
Exactly.
It's funny.
It'll all work out.
Yeah, picture if you will.
Well, that's a good tease, though. That will drive the audience to your, you know, your website or your Facebook page or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. No doubt about
it. Well, yeah, we'll see. Thank you
so much for being with us today. Hey,
it's been
great having you on.
Yeah,
well,
thank you
back.
So much for thinking of me. Like I told Catherine, I said, I'm kind of boring. So, you know, you sure you want me on that?
Not at all.
All right.
That is going to do it, folks. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me.